Stand, please. Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-716, Belize Social Development Limited Appellant versus Government of Belize. Mr. Chairman for appellant, Mr. Bachambrillo for appellee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Lewis Kimmelman. I'm here representing the petitioner appellant Belize Social Development Limited. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal time. Your Honors, this appeal is from a minute order of the district court, a minute order that stayed proceedings in a New York Convention International Arbitration Award enforcement proceeding, quote, pending resolution of the party's case before the Belize Supreme Court, close quote. No findings, no explanation, no reasons, no opinion. There are two issues on appeal before this court this morning. First, does this court have appellate jurisdiction? We believe it. It absolutely does. Secondly, did the district court abuse its discretion in granting this stay? In granting a stay of the New York Convention Award Enforcement Proceeding, we believe absolutely the court did abuse its discretion. Your Honors, there are 5 points that we believe are determinative of both of these issues, and the issues are interrelated. The first, and this is paramount, this is a New York Convention Federal Arbitration Act Chapter 2 award enforcement proceeding. It is unlike any case cited by the appellee in their briefs. It's unlike any case that we cite because, to my knowledge, there is no case under the New York Convention in the United States where an award enforcement proceeding has been stayed without reasons, save as provided in Chapter 6, Article 6 of the New York Convention. That is the only possible basis. It's to be emphasized that because this is a New York Convention award, the merits of the dispute between the parties is not before this court and was not before the district court. The merits are not open to second guessing or appellate review.
The question for us is whether you were put effectively out of court, at least under the first prong of the appellate jurisdiction doctrine. And I don't see how you were put effectively out of court in the same way that Moses Cohen was talking about with the state court proceeding being res judicata, for example. That wouldn't happen here as a result of the stay. So how do you fit yourself? Let's talk about the finality prong. How do you fit yourself within that?
Your Honor, I believe the answer is I believe this case is frankly a far more compelling case than Moses Cohen. And I say that because in this case, because this is a New York Convention Award, Chapter 2 FAA case, this court must be guided, and this is in Appendix 2 of our brief, by Section 207 of the Federal Arbitration Act. The issue here is not just that the district court had jurisdiction. The issue here is that Congress has mandated what the district court must do.
Questions are appellate jurisdiction, though, and with respect to stay orders, under the finality part, we'll get to collateral order, I assume, you have to show that you're effectively out of court. And this stay did not put you effectively out of court in the sense that Moses Cohen talked about, because the Belize proceeding will not be res judicata in the D.C. District Court proceeding, correct?
Your Honor, any proceeding in Belize or anywhere else in the world, save for London, England, cannot be res judicata.
Exactly, which hurts you on appellate jurisdiction because it's not effectively out of court in the same way that Moses Cohen talked about, right?
But, Your Honor, I think not, because although in Moses Cohen the issue was the relationship between the federal court and the state court, I believe the issue here is more compelling. And I draw the court's attention to Section 207 of the FAA because here the district court was required to confirm the award. We were put out of court when the district court failed to do that. And so it is
put out of court, you're delayed.
And the point,
because I'm you're focused on the language of the 207. I'm focused on the language of Moses Cone. And they said this stay order amounts to a dismissal of the suit. That's not true of the stay order in this case.
Your Honor, I think it is for this reason.
It's not a dismissal. Well, it's a delay.
Well, it is a delay that's not permitted by Congress. And when a delay occurs that's not permitted by Congress, it's essentially a dismissal. Here, as the court knows, and the court has said this in the Termo Rio case, award enforcement proceedings are to be summary proceedings. And on top of that, Congress mandated that a court must confirm, save for the grounds provided. Now, if a court must confirm, there can be no delay. It is a summary proceeding, and Congress has mandated exactly.
What if the district court, because of the press of criminal cases and Speedy Trial Act concerns, just didn't get to this for a year?
Your Honor, I think if the court seeking to comply with Congress's mandate statutorily could not resolve the issue, we might seek relief from the court during that interim, but the court would not have, in effect, said to the petitioner, you're out of court, which is exactly what this order did. The court had only one option here. It must confirm unless it finds, and I'll come to that word.
What if the order said it stayed for 12 months?
Our position would be the same, Your Honor. The mandate is unqualified, and the only exception to that is a finding.
What if it said it was stayed for a week? Would you have appellate jurisdiction over that order to appeal that order?
Your Honor, as a practical matter, I'm not sure I could invoke the appellate jurisdiction quickly enough.
In theory leads to that.
In theory, Your Honor, in theory, I think one could try to, but I think as a practical matter, it would.
Not practical, but your theory is that it would go to that. Yeah.
But Your Honor, but the point here, Your Honor, is. This situation under the New York Convention is unlike anything else that I certainly have ever seen in the context of a stay. And that's why I say it's more compelling than Moses Cone, where you're talking about the relationship between the federal courts and the state courts. Here, Congress has mandated what must be done, and it's provided the only exit.
What you're really going to is that the district court made a really big mistake in staying this rather than handling it immediately. That's your position. But mistakes, even really big mistakes, do not automatically translate into appellate jurisdiction over an interlocutory order.
Your Honor, that is generally true. But however, I don't believe this is an interlocutory order, because with a mandate from Congress, the district court had to act on the petition before it in accordance with Chapter 2 of the Federal Arbitration Act. It's quite directive. There's no room for error. There's no room for the exercise of discretion, save for as provided in Section 207. And that didn't happen. And so when the district court failed to comply with that congressional mandate, I believe we are as effectively out of court as any party in any of the cases that we've cited to the court. And I think this is frankly more compelling than those cases.
I guess you'd have the same argument on collateral order, because that's the doctrine there depends on an order that amounts to a refusal to adjudicate the merits, I guess is the way Moses Cone describes it, and I guess your point is the same on that.
Yes, Your Honor, and if this court didn't exercise jurisdiction, then the congressional mandate to confirm and to do it promptly would frankly be thwarted and negated. And hence, either it's appealable as of right, as we believe it is, or it's certainly a collateral order. And if it isn't that, we would request this court treat this as an application for a writ of mandamus, because clearly there's a flagrant abuse of discretion.
Mandamus is very rare, as you're well aware, and
correct.
That goes to my point earlier. A lot of what you've said here goes to the district court really made a big mistake on the substance of how it handled this. But if we had appellate jurisdiction over every stay order that was mistakenly entered, even seriously mistaken entered, we'd have a lot more appellate jurisdiction over cases in midstream.
True, Your Honor, but I suggest, Judge Kavanaugh, there is no stay order like this one that this court has ever seen. And it is so It is so flagrantly violative of the statute, and because of that, puts us out of court. It has to be final.
More of a mandamus argument, which you're making.
We've raised all the potential arguments because we believe, frankly, all of them apply. And this court clearly has jurisdiction to remedy what Congress expressly provided could not happen.
Judge Kavanaugh asked you about Moses Cone and with the problem that in that case the federal court wouldn't be precluded in the end from making a determination. Cone cites Idlewild. Idlewild's about Pullman abstention.
Correct.
In Pullman abstention, would the federal court have been bound by the state court's decision?
I believe the theory, as I recall, Judge Garland, of Pullman abstention is that there is belief that there should be deference to what the state court has done. The difference here and the reason why I believe...
There's no deference here, right?
There,
what the Belize court will do.
There can be no deference, and the point that we've made in our brief is this. The New York Convention, unlike the situations with respect to the federalism between state and federal courts, the New York Convention contemplates and provides for enforcement proceedings concurrently in different states around the world. That's the structure of the New York Convention.
Can I just...
Yes, Your Honor.
I have to admit, Idlewild is not the clearest case, but it's a case in which they gave the state court an opportunity to pass on a constitutional question, namely the scope of the United States Constitution's Commerce Clause. Would there be any requirement of deference to a state court's decision on the United States Supreme Court deferring to or any federal court deferring to that question?
Your Honor, normally I would think a federal court would not, unless there were an issue of construction of the state statute. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it would be sensible to allow the state in the first instance, based on the Frankfurter principle of avoiding constitutional issues if possible, to allow.
So there's an avoidance question in that case, and there's an avoidance question in this case. Right? Maybe Belize will not rule in the way that you fear, and that would allow avoidance. But Idlewild, in your favor, suggests when avoidance is the only question, there can be appellate jurisdiction. You're fighting me on this. I thought this was
in
your
favor. That's a favorable question.
But the argument was in your favor. So,
Your Honor, it is in our favor. But the point,
if it's wrong, I would like to know that.
No, Your Honor, it isn't. And Moses Cone confirms.
Moses Cone limits it, though. That's the problem, right? Is the footnote in Moses Cone that preserves but limits Idlewild, and what that footnote means is
obscure,
intriguing, but it does seem to say that Idlewild, it says, doesn't seem to say, that Idlewild is limited to cases where the object of the stay is to require all or an essential part of the federal suit to be litigated in a state forum. And that's not happening here.
No, it's not
happening. Even if you substitute foreign for state, it's still not happening here.
No, it's not happening here, and that's why I come back to the fundamental point. In the New York Convention context, the cases that the court normally looks to with
that
respect...
Pause over that. Do we know that? I mean, we only know that if we address the merits, which is what you're addressing. If we start with the district court's assumption that it is staying the case so that it can be litigated in Belize, then it looks a lot like the same thing that Moses Cone and footnote was talking about. We only know differently if we agree with you on the merits. This, again, is an argument in your favor, not against you.
Yes, Your Honor.
But what's wrong? Why is that wrong? You seem doubtful, and I don't want to argue in your favor if it's doubtful.
My point, I think, really is this, and both sides have parsed through the cases, Moses Cone, Idlewild, and all the progeny of those cases. And I think that as I've looked back at the cases, they don't confront, and they can't confront, the issue that this court is presented with. And that is, in the New York Convention context, the issue presented there and effectively out of court is a concept which is translatable into the situation here, but the context is a totally different context. We are not in the context where parties are fighting about litigation over the merits in different fora. The merits have been resolved. We're talking about enforcement proceedings, which means is the equivalent in this court of a party with a judgment enforcing the judgment against assets.
Keep going, sorry.
And in that context, and with the mandate that Congress provided in Section 207, there can be no stay, period, save as the convention provides for.
You've argued yourself out of both of your first two arguments, and we're now on your third argument that this is mandamus, that this decision here is so completely out of the universe of possibly acceptable decisions, among other reasons, because it gives no reason, that mandamus is required. This is a one-off. We won't. Your answer to Judge Kavanaugh's concern that we would have many appeals is no. This one is one that has it's impossible for the court to do. It would be as if the court announced, "I'm making an order. I'm not going to decide this because I don't know because my shirts won't be ready for another 2 years. And whenever my shirts are ready, that's when we'll hear it." That would be a good ground for mandamus. And I take it that's the nature of the argument you're making.
Your Honor, I believe our argument, frankly, is on all three theories. They do; they obviously intersect.
Well, I think what
and overlap.
What Judge Garland is saying is your argument on the third theory, and your argument on the merits ultimately, is that it was such a mistake that mandamus must lie. But that undermines your first two theories, because there's going to be the mistake was thinking that the Belize court had any relevance to what's going on in the federal court.
Well,
and therefore, looking at Moses Cone, the Belize court being irrelevant means you're actually not being effectively put out of court, that there's not something that's going to be res judicata or part of your suit's resolved in the Belize court. Actually, nothing of relevance is going to be resolved in the Belize court, which undermines your Moses Cone theory. You following me?
I'm following, Your Honor, but it doesn't undermine Moses Cone, because at the end of the day, effectively out of court has that meaning in Moses Cone. Under Chapter 2 of the FAA, effectively out of court has to have a different meaning because it's a different legal context. Here, Your Honor, I think it is apparent from the directive of Congress in Chapter 2 that we are effectively out of court. Effectively,
in other words, let me just be clear. Is it your reading of Moses Cone that in that case, the question of arbitrability was identical in the federal and the state court? Here, essentially, we have the same matter. In other words, you have the FAA and the New York Convention. The London court has already resolved questions of fraud, et cetera, and held that the agreements were valid. That's the issue that's before the Belize court. If the Belize court were to decide that the agreements were invalid or otherwise unenforceable, as I understand your argument, the New York Convention contemplates you would still be entitled to enforcement.
Your Honor, starting with the end first, we would be, yes, but in fact, the Congress has directed that we enforce now, and that we enforce in accordance with Chapter 2 of the FAA. Now,
I understand that, but I'm just trying to understand this theoretical obstacle, or not theoretical, but obstacle that Moses Cone poses for your first argument.
Your Honor, I don't think there is one. As I recall the facts of Moses Cone, there was a plenary action in state court. There was a proceeding brought in federal court to enforce the arbitration clause. The issue was whether an appeal would be granted from the injunction, as I recall, granted by the state court to enjoin the FAA enforcement proceeding. That context is obviously not the context that exists here. But what we have here is this: a stay granted without reasons, pending an action in Belize, which we've demonstrated from the record. There are no findings to support there is an action, and in fact, we believe it is clearly erroneous for the district court to have included that our client is a party to any action in Belize.
So it isn't Moses Cone, clearly, all right?
That's
your argument.
Well, our argument is obviously the facts of Moses Cone do not apply here, but the principle in Moses Cone, which comes from Idlewild, of effectively out of court, does apply. Because what Congress required the court
Congress
to do...
Congress required the court to enforce. It didn't say enforce now. Indeed, the New York Convention contemplates circumstances where Belize could have gone back to the English court.
Yes, Your Honor, that's exactly true. However, Congress said the court shall confirm the award. I believe there are few statutes on the books in the U.S. Code where Congress has been so specific and directive as to what the district court must do.
Shall affirm the award unless.
Correct, Your Honor. And there are no Article 6 grounds that have been invoked by the respondent. So to the point of Moses Cone.
But on the now point that Judge Rogers raised.
Yes, Your
Congress
Honor.
Does put time limits in for courts to act on various things, speedy trial, certain kinds of constitutional cases. There's no time limit in this statute that requires immediate resolution or resolution within 6 months?
Your Honor, there is no time limit, but this court has acknowledged that the Federal Arbitration Act provides that these are to be summary proceedings. They're treated as in the nature of motions.
Another question that's in your favor. Just a warning in advance. 207 says the court shall confirm the award unless it finds one of the grounds for refusal or deferral. And what the court's done here is defer, but it has not found. So it has violated, I mean, I would say that would be your best argument, that in order to defer in this case, the court has to make a finding of one of the grounds. The court made no finding, and therefore it's violated the direction that the court must decide unless it makes a finding.
That's correct.
That sounds like a very good mandamus argument.
It's a mandamus argument.
It is, Your Honor, and it made no finding, and in fact, the only kind of finding it could make is one that's consistent with the New York Convention, which would be Article 6. And on this record, it's clear that argument could not have even been made nor found.
Well, why don't we talk about the merits then for a minute if we've exhausted the jurisdictional question.
Sure.
What about their argument that this was made under Belize is a an authority that can resolve this because the arbitration the agreement provided that the laws of substantive law of Belize would govern?
Your Honor, this court's decision in Termo Rio, the Fifth Circuit's decision in Caraja Botas, the Southern District of New York's decision in the Breedis case, I think make clear, and to my knowledge, there is no case in the United States to the contrary, that under the law of which means the procedural law that applies to the arbitration, it does not mean the substantive law that's provided in the underlying contract between the parties. And so therefore, the only place in which this award could have been sought to be set aside or vacated would be in London under the English Arbitration Act. That was the place of arbitration, and that was the law under which the award was rendered.
What about Article 5?
Of the New York Convention, Your Honor? Your Honor, the district court, because the district court stayed this enforcement proceeding, it seemed to us that the only relevant provision of the New York Convention, in fact, the only one that speaks to staying or deferral, is Article 6.
Well, what about Article 5, let's see, subsection 2B, where it's talking about recognition and enforcement may be refused if the competent authority, and I think I know what you're going to argue on that, determines that recognition or enforcement of the award would be contrary to the public policy of that country. So if the Belize court were to rule under Belize law that the agreements on which the arbitration award is based are invalid, would that be a ground on which the district court could act?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, because the language in Article 5 to both A and B, the reference to of that country,
yeah,
is referring to the country in which enforcement of the award is being sought. So in this case, of that country means the public policy of the United States of America.
Right.
It does not mean the public policy of Belize, and the public policy of Belize.
No, but the public policy of the United States would arguably could be that a federal court will refuse to enforce an agreement that's based on a contract that the country where the contract was entered and whose laws apply say that it's invalid.
Your Honor, that might be a basis for a public policy. I think under the interpretation of Article 5, the public policy defense to enforcement, it's meant to be the most fundamental international public policies, and it would not look in any circumstance to the underlying dispute or the underlying contract between the parties. And of course, it would only be U.S. public policy, going to fundamental things like due process, for instance, but not to any underlying contractual disputes.
Well, I know that's one interpretation, but I'm just trying to understand what Congress had in mind when it said you shall enforce subject to conditions in the New York Convention, and then you read Article 5 as well as Article 6.
Yes, Your Honor. Our understanding is based on what Congress did in Section 207. The only basis not to confirm or the only basis to defer, i.e. to stay, have to be in the New York Convention, and that means they either have to be in Article 5 or they have to be in Article 6. Here, the district court did not find anything, and obviously Section 207 requires a finding before the district court can do anything. And so clearly there's no articulated basis here, and that in and of itself is violative. And even if Section 207 were not so directive, the stay would be violative of the Landa standard that the Supreme Court articulated years ago.
All right. Why don't we hear from the other side, and we'll give you a couple of minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please, the court. I think we first have to think about what it is that the judge did and what he was facing in this case. First of all, this is a case between Belize entities under Belize law related to an arbitration about an agreement to be performed in Belize with the government of Belize. It has nothing to do with the United States. There's a prior filed action related to this, as we've discussed, in Belize before this case ever gets filed. This judge decides, I'm going to wait and see what happens in Belize, wait, not refuse to adjudicate a case in the United States. I'm just going to wait and see what happens there, because I believe that the Supreme Court in Belize is better suited to decide the relevant issues of Belize law.
Did he say that last part?
That the Supreme Court in Belize is better suited.
Did he say that, the judge?
He did not say any of that. Now, the question is, why didn't he do any findings? He didn't have to, because no opposition was ever filed by the plaintiff in this case. They never filed any opposition. They never raised any of these arguments. There's nothing in the record. If you look at the docket, there was no opposition.
We filed a reply. You moved for a stay?
We moved for a stay and in the alternative to dismiss on sovereign immunity.
And they didn't respond at all? They confessed judgment?
They did not file an opposition.
Uh-huh.
So none of these arguments have ever been vetted before the district court, and that's another reason why there shouldn't be any consideration of even appellate jurisdiction, because
even if that's right, how do we get over the fact that the statute says there has to be a finding before the court can defer recognition or enforcement?
Well, the court has found that it has ordered that it's going to stay the action only until the Belize action gets adjudicated. And by the way, the hearing in Belize is set for January 30th and 31st. So we're not talking about, 5 years from now. That thing case has been moving along.
How do we get over the text requirement that it find one of the grounds for deferral specified in the convention? How do we know which ground did it find, by the way?
Well, It found that it states expressly in the order that there is an action pending in Belize.
But that's not a ground, right? The convention doesn't say if there's an action pending in Belize. It doesn't say that.
Of course it does. Judge Rogers referred to Article 5 of the convention, which provides that you can refuse enforcement or delay enforcement if a competent court has stayed enforcement of the action.
But it's not a competent tribunal, right?
Yes, it is. And here we have a disagreement.
For purposes of this convention.
The reason why it is because this is what Article 5 says. May be suspended if the arbitration award has been suspended by a competent authority of the country in which or under the law of which that award was made. The convention doesn't say under the procedural law or the substantive law. That distinction doesn't exist. It just says under the law. And also, if you look at the agreement here, this agreement doesn't say that only the substantive law of Belize applies. It says the law of Belize applies. So here what BSDL is trying to do is trying to draw a distinction that you do not find in the language of the convention, and you also don't find in the agreement. So there is a basis, a reasonable basis for a judge to conclude that I fall within Article 5. And since we are under an abuse of discretion standard, this is not de novo. Since it doesn't make that distinction, it is reasonable for the judge to assume that it could. Now,
so is your argument that since this is a minute order, you know, an order without any findings or reasoning, that we should look to the reasons you gave in seeking a stay and assume the judge adopted your reasoning in as much as there was no opposition filed?
That would be one point. The other point is that the order, minute order itself expressly finds that there is a pending lawsuit in Belize and states until that lawsuit is done, I am going to wait.
What do you say to opposing counsel's citation of the Tamario Rio case as holding that depends on the country in which the arbitration is took place?
In that case, this court also issued a warning, and it said it affirmed the stay in that case, holding that you have to be very careful if you're a district judge if you have this situation, because you don't want to jump the gun and confirm an arbitration award in the U.S. and then have the Supreme Court of another country tell you, you know, it's invalid under our law. And I think that's the same warning that applies in this case, because what do we have here? The Supreme Court in Belize is going to decide whether the award was valid, whether the agreements that are the basis of the award were valid, as to both BTL, Belize Telemedia, and BSDL. If the Supreme Court, let's just assume for a second their argument that BSDL is not a part of the action in Belize because they haven't been served. I'll get to that. They are a part, and they've been served. But let's just assume that for a second. BTL, Belize Telemedia, is the assignor of whatever rights they're trying to confirm here. If the Supreme Court holds in Belize that BTL has no rights under this award and that agreement, the accommodation agreement, was an illegal agreement because it was done by a prior prime minister under the table without congressional approval and gives them tax benefits that contradict the Belize Constitution, then if we confirm that here now, we're putting this court, the district court, in a very difficult situation in terms of international comedy. It makes no sense to jump the gun and do that. It makes much better sense to wait and see what the Belize court does first.
That's not quite an answer to the question, which is, in Tamario Rio, it was the country, Colombia, both where the arbitration took place and where the Colombian court is the one that nullified. Here we have a situation where the arbitration took place in one country and the Supreme Court of a different country.
Right.
So why doesn't Tamario Rio resolve the question that we've been talking about here, that it's only the court of the country in which the arbitration that took place?
Two reasons. Number one, with all due respect, if Tamario Rio has got to be interpreted to mean that only procedural law is what the New York Convention refers to, it was wrong, because that's not what the convention says.
That's an argument for the en banc court, not for us.
I guess my question,
is that what Tamario Rio says?
You get a second argument.
I am not sure that that's what Tamario Rio says. Uh-huh. And I'm looking right now at the language of the convention, and it says the law under which the award was made. The law under which the award was made is Belize law. They didn't make it under British law. They didn't make the award under procedural law. You don't make an award under procedural law. You make it under substantive law. So the issue here is, could the judge, it's abuse of discretion again. So could the judge have decided, even rather, you know, can I just wait based on this? And I think there's a reasonable basis based on my reading that I just explained. Now, there's also another issue, whether the New York Convention applies at all. Belize has argued that it doesn't to the district court because Belize became independent in 1982. And after 1982, it never acceded to the New York Convention. Accession is a post-independence word for ratification. And we presented that evidence to the district court. We presented a letter sent by the United Nations to Belize after its independence indicating that you are not listed as a country that has signed the New York Convention. So my second argument is that New York Convention doesn't even apply. We're talking about international norms here. So the judge is looking at that issue too. And this is one of many issues. This is not a simple confirmation action. BSDL was not a part of the arbitration. BSDL is not the beneficiary of the award. It's not even named in it. What Lord Ashcroft and his companies did is they created BSDL in the BVI 2 days after the award is entered ex parte by the LCIA, which is like the AAA, it's not even a court, and then they transferred part of the award in order to be able to jump ship out of Belize and try to invoke and do some foreign shopping. So this is not, in terms of going back to your question, Judge Kavanaugh, of appellate jurisdiction, they are not effectively out of court. I've just discussed a number of issues which are going to need to be decided by the district court, even if we win, the government wins in Belize. What are other issues that are going to have to be addressed? The validity of the assignment. We are saying the assignment contradicted the contract, and so they have no rights at all. That has not been decided. Who controls BSDL? We have argued to the district court that the government controls it now and that Allen and Aubrey should not be sitting here bringing this case. That has not been decided. We have argued that it cannot be confirmed under U.S. public policy grounds under the revenue rule. The revenue rule prevents United States courts from adjudicating cases that deal with foreign tax issues. At the crux of this lawsuit is whether Lord Ashcroft had the right to get favorable tax treatments in Belize, and the arbitration award contains a going forward injunction pretending to bind the Belize government in their ability to tax these companies in the future. That is classic revenue rule issues. The judge hasn't decided whether that issue either. There's that issue of whether Belize is bound by the New York Convention. Unless they are willing to get up here in their reply and say that they're going to fold on all those issues and that they admit that they are bound by what's going to happen in Belize, there's going to be a lot of litigation in that district court, even if we win. So this is clearly not the Moses Cohen situation where you have an arbitration decision made in the state court that is res judicata. They've admitted that is not the case. So there's really no appellate jurisdiction. And that's the first prong of the collateral order argument, and that's the analysis under the finality. But then look at the other two prongs. Are the issues in Belize separate from the issues here? Our discussion tells you they are not. So they don't fall under the second prong. The third prong, are they going to be able to appeal this? Of course. What is the judge going to do? Our best case scenario. We win in Belize and the judge says, under Tamorio, I'm going to defer to the judgment of the Belize court like my court of appeals told me I should defer to the judgment of the Colombia court. They can appeal that. They'll be able to appeal that decision of the district judge to grant international comedy or not to the decision of the Belize court. So it's pretty clear that there's no jurisdiction here. And in terms of a mandamus argument, you gotta show grave, irreparable consequences. What are they here? The merits action is gonna be heard in Belize at the end of January. It's not too far. And like I already said, they can appeal to this court if the district judge decides to follow the decision of the Belize court. This is also not a mandamus situation. Let me just go briefly here. I have 2 minutes left to the issue of did he get it right or wrong. I think by now it's pretty clear that he got it right. Again, we're on an abuse of discretion standard. This is not de novo. There are plenty of reasons for this judge to say, I'm going to wait and see what the court says between in Belize before I decide here. Even if they were not considered parties of the action in Belize, I want to see what rights the assignor has. If he has no rights, they have no rights. But let's talk for a second here about the service issue, because they make a big deal out of that. They were served. If you look at A366 and A368, they are the proofs of service of the ex parte order and related documents on BTL and BSDL. Their first argument is they served us in Belize. We are a BVI entity. They didn't serve us in the right place. I'm going to refer you to A333, very important document. This is the notice of assignment. This notice of assignment was sent by Allen and Overy to the government of Belize. So they know all about it. They probably drafted it. It identifies the place of business of BSDL as 212 North Front Street in Belize City, the very same address where 1 week later they are served with the documents. So it's amazing for them to get up here and say that we weren't served. And they don't even raise that argument below. It's a new argument. And the only thing they point to in their reply appellate brief when we raise this is that somebody who's a director of BSDL said in one line, we weren't served. So they were served. And finally, the other point they make is that the complaint wasn't served in the proof of service. The complaint is part of the ex parte documents. All of this could have been flushed out in the district court, but it was never addressed. So they were served, and the judge had reason to wait and see what happens in Belize.
Right, thank you.
Yes. Your Honors, let me start with the appealability issue. Remember, the order here says, pending resolution of the party's case before the Belize Supreme Court. There's no duration. There's no length. It's clear from the case law, including Moses Cohn, that a stay without limitation puts a party effectively out of court.
Isn't the argument, we're told, is in January?
Your Honor, that's the first time I've heard it. That case was allegedly filed in 2009. If it's in January of 2012, what's happened in the case since then? We've put in the record, and let me make this clear.
The cases drag on. You're aware of that.
Yes, Your Honor, I am. But under the New York Convention, it's supposed to be expeditious. It's not litigation of the merits. It's only enforcement of the award. With respect to the issue of jurisdiction, were we served? When we filed our petition in the district court, we put in a sworn affidavit from a director of BSDL stating, and it's in the record, I believe it's page 207, that there had been no service of process on the petitioner appellant. The papers in this case make clear, and it's their papers, not ours, that the only way you commence a proceeding is by filing a fixed date claim form, and a sample of it's in the record. Their affidavit of service indicates what they served. They never served the fixed date claim form, and that form says in express words, unless this form is served within 6 months, it is invalid. That form and that proceeding was invalid before we ever commenced our proceeding in the district court. And my point here is, Your Honor, we raised it with the district court on the first day we commenced the proceeding. There are no findings in this order determining that there is or is not service. There are no findings that the Belize court does or does not have jurisdiction. How can the district court...
Did you make the arguments that you're making here in an opposition to the motion for the stay?
Your Honor, we made some of them in our petition, but let me explain why we didn't file an opposition to their motion. We filed, and the record is clear about this, a motion to extend the scheduling date, and we made a motion to clarify the court's minute order. After the respondent filed its opposition papers and its motion to stay, Belize enacted a criminal statute, which we believed made it illegal for us to file papers in the district court in support of our position. As we approached the scheduling deadline for filing papers, our expert witness on Belize law, because as you know from the papers the respondent has submitted, they put in an affidavit from a Belize lawyer. We sought a matching affidavit to controvert the points they made. As I indicated in my papers that I filed in the district court, and they are in the record, that person refused to provide us with a sworn statement because he believed, on the advice of counsel, that he would be violating the criminal statute that Belize enacted on at the end of March 31st, 2010.
What about the argument that you're making here that the New York Convention and the federal statute require an immediate decision, bar deferral, regardless of anything having to do with Belize law or anything else? Why did you not make that argument?
When we filed our petition, together with a memorandum of law and affidavits, we effectively made the argument under Section 207 that the court was required to confirm absent a ground under Article 5 or Article 6. And I should say, Your Honor, when we asked for the schedule to be extended,
why in response to the motion to stay didn't you say that, and you don't need an expert for this, you can't stay it because of the deferral provision in the statute? You didn't say that, right?
Your Honor, in the motion that we filed, we told the court, we asked for a hearing, and we asked for the schedule to be adjourned. And we asked for a hearing so we could try to present to the court the quandary we were in because of the Belize criminal statute. And, Your Honors, it's no accident that statute was passed after they filed their papers and before we had to respond.
Did you believe that the statute barred you from making the legal point that you're making here?
Your Honor, my firm and my client was concerned that under the statute, they or we could be indicted ex parte in Belize for violating a ex parte TRO, which we believe the Belize court did not have jurisdiction to grant.
What happened to that Belize criminal statute?
Your Honor, it remains on the books. It's
so
being challenged.
You're being very brave today?
Well, Your Honor, that statute has been and is being challenged constitutionally in the Belize courts and beyond. There's ultimately a Caribbean court that will adjudicate that issue. But I believe we have an obligation to our client, and I believe as an officer of the court, it cannot be.
I don't disagree with you. I'm asking why that didn't apply in response to the motion for the stay. Or at least asking the district court to reconsider.
Well, we did, Your Honor, we did.
That's to clarify?
Yes, we filed a motion, and it's in the record as well.
And did that make the points that we're talking about today?
It made the points specifically that we had raised and the Belize court was without jurisdiction over us, and that the TRO was a nullity because there was no jurisdiction. We made all the points we could.
Is that in the appendix or?
Yes, Your Honor, and let me just direct the court to it very quickly. The motion to suspend is on page A537. And to which is attached the criminal statute. And that was followed when a minute order was entered denying that without explanation, without granting us a hearing, we filed a motion to clarify the minute order, which appears at page A549 of the joint appendix. And that motion to clarify was denied on the same day that the court entered its stay in this proceeding.
Okay, let me ask one more question because we're out of time. I was going to say we're running out of time, but can't say that anymore. On Tenorio Rio, opposing counsel made one argument, which is that Tenorio Rio is wrong. The which of course we can't consider as a panel. But the second argument is, at least I'll reformulate it for him, would be that Tenorio Rio doesn't address the question we have before us today. That was a case where the court was just interpreting the language of the convention, which says the common authority in the country in which it was made, and Colombia was the country in which it was made. So the under the law of which wasn't an issue in that case. Am I wrong about that?
No, Your Honor, I believe that's correct. In that case, the only argument was that it was the court in the country in which the award was rendered, which was Colombia, and that's what the D.C. Circuit dealt with.
So we don't. So the procedure versus substantive issue that you're raising here is not really resolved by Tamorio Rio.
You're
by a lot of language, but it certainly wasn't the issue.
It wasn't the issue there, but every case that Tamorio relies on, the Carhartt-Botas case in the Fifth Circuit, the Toys R Us case in the Second Circuit, the Burritos case in the Southern District of New York, all of those cases are relied on by this court, and each one of them made clear, and there is no federal court case to the contrary, that under the law of which means the procedural law of the place where the arbitration took place, unless the parties expressly provide otherwise. The presumption is that's the case. And so,
what does procedural mean in that context?
What it means in that context is the arbitration law under which the arbitration is conducted is presumed to be the arbitration law of the seat of arbitration, the place of arbitration. So in this case, where the place of arbitration was London, England, the procedural law that would govern how that arbitration is conducted would be found in the English Arbitration Act.
All right. Anything further?
Thank you.
We'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.